Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. SoulCycle, Core Power Yoga, CrossFit, Pure Bar, boutique fitness is all the rage. Extreme, expensive, studio exercise that focuses on very specific methods, from Pilates-influenced ballet to stationary bike dance. With a lot of soul talk along for the ride, they can get you ripped, they can become almost a religion, definitely a community. This hour On Point, what's driving boutique fitness? You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Is this you sweating for abs and enlightenment, leaving it all on the bike? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here's a SoulCycle class where Kelly Ripa came along for the ride.
Today we ride with the energy with which we would like to live. What do you say, SoulCycle?
Hey, hey, and off they go. With us today from Philadelphia is Karen Heller, national features reporter for The Washington Post. She recently wrote Sweat Equity, What's the Rise Behind the Rise of the Intense Boutique Fitness Programs. Karen Heller, thanks for being with us today.
Nice to be with you, Tom.
And from New York is Jacqueline Emmerich, fitness director at Shape Magazine. Jacqueline, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So, Jacqueline, take us into this. I mean, we've been through generation after generation of different flavors of workout. And, yeah, we can all remember, you know, barbells and you know, a few guys at the gym. Maybe gyms are passé now. Maybe they were passé already when jazzercise came around. What's really different about this boutique stuff except for the cost?
So we've definitely seen an evolution in the way that people are exercising. And boutiques, what they do is they take a specific form of exercise, whether that's cycling, running, rowing. There are even classes on a VersaClimber, which you might see at a typical gym collecting dust in the corner. And they bring these pieces of equipment in, or they specialize in these disciplines, and they take it to the next level. So it's like, you know, your Pilates 2.0. And they give you a very curated, specific experience that involves amenities that go beyond that of a big gym. And they bring in the community, and they bring in a different kind of energy. So people are really getting more than just walking into a gym and checking off a workout.
You went, Karen, and watched some solid core, and maybe more than that. You've got the coach there saying, it's, you know, it hurts like hell. I know that. It's juicy. It's good. It hurts so good. We've heard that kind of language before, but we're in new terrain here somehow. What did you see, Karen?
Well, I actually took most of these classes, and the intensity is a big part of it. A lot of the people, clients, told me that what they loved is it was the most intense and hardest workout in the shortest amount of time. So that's where the cost comes in. They feel they will pay more to get in shape faster. And a lot of these people are very driven. There is a certain type of person that you see in this class is it's pretty consistent. If you aren't, you're not into the intensity, I don't think you're going to keep taking these courses.
Into the intensity and into the bite on your bank account, because they are not cheap, but intensity for sure. Here's a little bit from a flywheel class in New York earlier this year. Intense cycling class, participants compete on a scoreboard.
I need you to nail this thing. I get really uncomfortable for 8 seconds. It's really temporary.
Go, 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 nail it. And then it's something more than that. It gets almost cultish. We heard a little bit of that, be there until you're working out the way you want your life to be. This is one of the SoulCycle co-founders. They went public last year, made a whole bunch of money, I think $90 million each of the co-founders. Elizabeth Cutler here talking about the goals of her company.
And we try to like create an environment where people can just really like be by themselves on the bike and yet be part of something else at the same time. I always say like you come for your body and you stay for your head. So to me, it's just like, how do I get through my own obstacles? Like if I get through them on the bike and then I can go out into my life and just, you know, operate like on a higher plane, that's like super valuable and very powerful. So I don't know if that's like where the cultish part comes into it.
Okay, Karen, operating on a higher plane. Now, we understand being in shape, and we understand being fit, but taking it to a higher plane, what is that about?
Well, SoulCycle, I think, has mastered this. I mean, at SoulCycle, almost all of these programs have boutiques. There's a lot of shopping involved in this. And in SoulCycle, they don't just have outfits that say SoulCycle. You have your own community. So I took a class at Mount Vernon's studio in Washington. So the go Mount Vernon. So it becomes your like your own college, your alma mater. And many another yoga, Pure Power Yoga, has a fake fireplace. It's like après ski, but après yoga to hang around before and after the class. So there is this real bonding, and there's a kind of philosophy that goes with it. I mean, people at Seoul are really religious. Is almost there. And the people who teach there are complete cheerleaders for this group. So they'll go, they don't just say go Seoul, they'll go Seoul Mount Vernon. So you become part of that group.
I mean, get the community part. We'll look at that. Jacqueline, I mean, you're at Shape Magazine. That says in and of itself, you know, it's body. But there's more than body going on here. Are you embracing that at the magazine? Is that part of what you're running with as well now, this higher plane stuff?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, your body is just one part of being fit and healthy. Your mind is a whole nother level. And, you know, that plays into how motivated you are to get up and go work out in the first place. And I think that, you know, these big gyms, you walk in through a turnstile and you're among the sea of equipment that you might not necessarily know how to use. And you sort of recognize people, but you don't actually really interact with them. And it's a very oftentimes individual experience, but at these boutique studios, they're much smaller and they're more intimate. And the front desk people know your name and you recognize the people that you're working out with every day because often it's at the same time. And again, to touch on that intensity level, like you are working out at such a higher level than you might otherwise, and you're experiencing something in yourself and you're seeing someone next to you do the same thing. So you learn something about yourself in that moment and you learn something about the people in that room. And that's different than just being out with your friends at dinner or being at work. It just takes you to a different place.
We had these Harvard Divinity students who compared CrossFit to church, saying, you write here, Karen, a place where unaffiliated millennials find community and spiritual togetherness. Jacqueline, walk us through some of the different options here and what they are. I mean, this isn't just a way of being fit. You described this as a sort of defining the kind of person you are. We talked about SoulCycle, which is this sort of this is not just spin. This is not just cycling. This is dancing on the bike. I haven't done it. Describe it to us, Jacqueline.
All right. So there you have so many choices when it comes to boutique studios. So there really is something for everyone. You can pick a class based on what you like to do for exercise. So like you're talking about SoulCycle. So if you like to ride a bike, SoulCycle would be a good place to start. Now, SoulCycle is different than your average indoor cycling class because the studio is very low lit. The music is loud. It's candlelit. The instructor is talking to you about spirituality and about how you riding on the bike really shows something about the kind of person that you are in your everyday life. And that said, that class tends to be a more spiritual class. And then you look at something like Flywheel, which is also an indoor cycling class. They have a piece of equipment called the tech pack or a torque board, and it's attached to every bike, and it tells you exactly what your resistance, your cadence, and your power output is, and it puts that number into a score on a board in front of the entire class. So you know exactly where you stack up against everyone else that you're riding, exactly
you're
where you stack up.
Competing hardcore all the time.
Well, you're competing, you know, against yourself too in a way, because if you have an off day, you can see if your numbers are a little lower, or maybe one day you just crush it. And you also can, of course, opt out of that option. You're not forced to be on that board. But maybe if you're a more competitive person, you choose the flywheel option. So even among those specific disciplines, there are options there. And then, of course, you have the whole amenity aspect of it. So some studios tend to be a little bit more bare bones in terms of you walk in, you've got the studio itself, which does have really high-end equipment, and they've got the showers and you're done. Other studios have incorporated things like full-on coffee bars and smoothie bars and lounge areas. And, you know, you think, I could bring my computer here and actually sit here all day. So, there are so many options. It's really just, you kind of realize, like, you lose that excuse to not work out because there's something there for everybody now.
Karen, what's the range of prices on these? I mean, I'm reading $300 a month, but they can go higher than that.
And that's they can go higher than that. I interviewed people who are spending $7,000 and $8,000 on these classes.
Per year.
One of the things we know about gyms, Jacqueline is absolutely right. We also know a lot of people join gyms and don't go. It's an extraordinary number of people who go very few times. I think it's 40 or 50%. So a lot of people make that pledge and then don't go there. So there's some peer pressure, I think. Just what Jacqueline was talking about, Orange Theory Fitness is another one where they I had to look, you had to be, it has to be explained what Orange Theory Fitness is, which is that you go into some orange zone where you burn fat at such a rate that supposedly you're burning fat after the class. And there's even a red zone when I think you start worrying about your heart.
Yes.
But they have monitors as well. And now there are actually monitors at home. I saw an ad for that, that people can compete at home if they want to do it, sort of like online, whatever. But there are people that motivates them. And there are other people who that's the last thing they want to do. The other thing is that you reserve the class. It's going to be as much as $40 in the Washington area. And that You make a reservation, you lose that money if you don't show up. For some people, that's a big motivator. They will go because they don't want to lose the money. And we know that, you know, we need different levels of motivation to work out, to do things. And the other thing I think that's important is that with anything, just like with restaurants, with clothing, there's always this tendency to have an elite level of class. And we found that Equinox was this elite gyms on, you know, in certain cities. And now we have it with these classes. And so it differentiates people who say, I am serious, I am hardcore, I am investing in this, as opposed to a large gym that is a modest amount, you know, modest fee every month.
Jacqueline, I have to admit this is way outside my experience. I'm a real troglodyte here, or Neanderthal. I mean, I spend so much less than this at the gym or just taking a good walk and get pretty well exercised, but that's just not enough for a certain set of people. But is this just super elite? Is this just fitness for rich folks?
You know, if you want to take a class with the founder of the studio, if you want to buy that unlimited monthly membership, if you're in New York City, it can kind of feel that way, but there are so many options. And I think that one of the really smart entry points for people is to buy class packs or to do these online membership services. And
where you
can
buy one pack and go to any of these different sort of specialized, narrow boutique fitness
operations. Yeah, you can kind of double dip. You can explore studios. You don't have to commit everything all in right away.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the explosion in boutique fitness. The money, the mantras, the mojo, SoulCycle, CrossFit, Solid Core, Flywheel, Core Power Yoga Bar, and Pure Bar, and all the rest, and why they're so popular. Karen Heller is with us, national features reporter for The Washington Post. She's written it up in a wonderful report. You can read it through our website, onpointradio.org. Jacqueline Emmerich is with us from New York, fitness director at Shape Magazine. Of course, they're all over it, all about it. You may be too. Do you put down the money for one of these specialized, high-intensity, maybe even spiritual fitness programs? What makes it worth it to you? Is it the workout, the state of mind, the community, the gear? We'll hear in a minute from one of the co-founders of CrossFit, but here's a moment from a Core Power yoga class, more expensive, of course, more intense version of yoga. The instructor, Jay, is guiding the class through a hot power fusion class.
Allow your movement to come from your core. Inhale your arms up high to the sky. Exhale, right elbow underneath the left. Cross at the elbows, cross at the wrist. Sit down really deep. And swing your right leg high up and over the left. Wrap your foot around. Now lift through your heart. Roll your shoulders down and back. And drag your elbow tips down toward your belly button.
Get those elbow tips down toward your belly button. $300, $400, $500 a month. More than that, Karen Heller says. Yeah, that's what it is, and people do it. We'll hear in just a moment from Greg Glassman with CrossFit. A couple callers here first. Adrian in Miami, Florida. Adrian, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I wanted to make a comment on the idea of community. When I played football in high school, one of the things I loved was going out to the gym with your friends and stuff like that. And then I remember around that time, there was this whole mixed martial arts thing, and I did that. And now I'm in boxing, and I'm doing that. So I'm not sure this community thing, it might be of a different form today, but I'm not sure it's something new, per se.
I guess I understand, but when you're at a gym, a regular gym, you may have buddies there that you develop over time, friends, but you're not doing the same thing at the same time. Does that make it different, Adrian?
For a regular working out gym, no, you're absolutely right. I was actually talking more about a boxing gym where you actually have a ring and it's the same guys and you're punching each other at the same time, you know.
I'm reading here that you're in a boxing gym right now. What about your friends? Are they going to boutiques or are they in standard gyms these days?
I'm not sure it's boutiques, but it is, well, I guess it is a higher end. It's not a standard gym. So yeah, I guess they are going to boutiques. And that's actually something I wanted to ask, cuz every time I hear, I like to think I'm a special snowflake, you know, with my own ideas, but every time something gets mentioned about millennials, I'm like, man, I fall into that group. Why is it that you guys think that it's millennials predominantly who are doing this?
Well,
I want to do it too if I could afford it.
Okay, well, Karen, how about it?
Well, simple answer is children. A lot of these classes are very early or late in the day, and so if you have children, you may not be able to arrange your schedule that way. But they're people of all ages in these classes, and I think that we do all look for community in different places, and these are new. I have to say there are so many of them in Washington, I just don't believe they can all continue to exist. There are, in some neighborhoods, more of these boutiques than there are coffee shops. And every time I thought I'd heard of all of them, there are more of them. And so we're at this moment where I think they're going to start to cannibalize each other, or they're going to have to cut costs to get customers. And as I was saying before, there is also this element of always wanting to belong to something. And belonging to a gym or belonging to a boxing gym, that is absolutely one thing. A lot of these people perhaps didn't have boxing. You know, spinning, people who take spinning classes are generally not cyclists. Cyclists like to be outside.
Yep.
So it's a completely different group of people. And you played that clip, by the way, about the yoga class. That is like no yoga class I have ever taken.
What do you mean?
Before.
Describe it.
I don't think it's really yoga. It goes way too fast to perfect poses. It's pounding music. You know, what you learn about yoga, and that goes to another part of these boutique fitness classes, is in yoga you're really working kind of on the spiritual aspect, perfecting poses, knowing in a way you'll never attain that perfection. It often can be very slow and methodical. In the Iyengar method, you can be working on poses for years and years. This goes so fast, I didn't feel I was doing any of the poses correctly.
The yogis may be jumping off the mountaintops in India when they see what goes on there. I don't know. Karen, Jacqueline Emmerich, stand by. Greg Glassman joins us right now from Santa Cruz, California, co-founded CrossFit in 2000 in Santa Cruz. There are now over 10,000 CrossFit gyms around the country. It's got high-intensity interval training and weightlifting, gymnastics, calisthenics. It's all in there. Greg Glassman, thank you very much for being with us today.
Tom, how are you?
Good. What do you think is driving this interest in smaller group, high-intensity, relatively high-cost fitness, Greg?
I'm not sure. I can tell you what's driving the CrossFit gyms, the CrossFit phenomenon. That's the success of the clients. The state of the end users is what's driving our phenomenon. But we've also made the gym owner or the trainer an independent owner operator, and that has its own catalyzing and powerful impact. And so I'm sure that a lot of these, what we call micro gyms or boutique gyms, I think we've let the cat out of the bag at CrossFit. We're about half the branded gyms on Earth right now. And I think that people see that all you have to do is get a small space and load some gear up in it. And if you have the expertise and a clientele, you can make something happen.
We've seen in the CrossFit marketing and in people coming out of there how ripped you can get doing that. So we get the body part of it. Do you emphasize the mind part as well, Greg, or is that not part of your message?
No, it's at the heart of what we're doing. But I'll tell you, above the bodies, what I think we're all most proud about is that we're a bright spot in the fight against chronic disease. 1.2 million Americans died in 2015 because of their exercise and nutrition habits. CrossFit has a way around that, and it's pretty straightforward.
So when you see SoulCycle with, you know, dark rooms and candles and all the rest, does that look in a different territory from your work?
Yeah, and I think it's cool, too. Listen, let me set the record straight here. I was a spin instructor. I'm an avid cyclist, and I had a class full of avid cyclists. Cycling loses some of its appeal when it's snowing or icy out or raining. And cycling was invented by cyclists. Spinning was invented by cyclists for cycling. So it's I'm all about SoulCycle. I think it's awesome. I made a lot of my training clients, fitness clients, out of my spin clients.
CrossFit is, of course, really huge. There are so many ways to go these days. Jacqueline Emmerich at Shape Magazine, another one of them. I mean, Greg's got a huge operation there, but there's Pure Bar out there now. What is that? Now this bringing ballet somehow into this boutique camp?
Right. So ballet bar workouts, they've definitely been popular for quite a while. And, of course, they're gaining in popularity and they're gaining in, you know, the style of bar class. But that's a really one of the easier studios, I think, to open because you just need a room, you need a wood floor, and you need a couple bars. So you're not stocking this room with a ton of fancy equipment necessarily. And then some will be a little bit more traditional toward ballet. So you'll do movements on the bar that ballet dancers might do in real life. Others, you might get off the bar, you might use some hand weights, you might use other kinds of equipment like a small squishy ball. You might get down on the floor. Some of them, of course, are more fast paced than others, but again, like, that whole level of variety is there.
Let's go to Brian in Miami. Brian, you're on the air. What do you know?
Hi, yes. So I'm a CrossFit coach down here in Miami. I actually just finished coaching a class. That class itself just had four women. Two of them were over 40. The other two were in their 20s. It's great because it's open to everyone. I can say for myself, I'm an Army veteran. And when I got out of the Army, I struggled with PTSD. And when I got into CrossFit, I first experienced it in the Army. And when I got back into CrossFit, when I came home, what it did for me, most importantly, was it gave me a community again. It got me out of my house, out of the isolation, and got me working with others. And, you know, from that, actually, next week, I am starting a new program at another CrossFit gym down here. Where we're incorporating CrossFit principles and combining that with tactical athlete training so that we can move guys that are veterans, active duty, law enforcement, and firefighters and bring them around each other and, you know, have the ability to speak about issues that they might be going through and work through them as well with the CrossFit method.
Brian, I'm really happy for your call. Karen, I mean, can you see sort of CrossFit community and group therapy all in one?
Well, people definitely feel better when they do these workouts, even when they're telling you, you know, you're in pain and whatever. I mean, you've gotten through it. The whole idea is that it's challenging. And I do know that when I go to the gym, you know, I'm self-monitoring, and some people can really drive themselves and other people can't. They need that coach. And the idea of a club, I mean, in some ways, these are much more clubs than a gym. Because you've self-selected that you're going to do this bar method or your, you know, soul cycle. And I talk to people say, well, I'll never go to that class. I hate that program. There are also people, they have to be in the front row. They have to be the right instructor. If that's not, you know, that's what they need. It's another thing. It's a lot like restaurants. You know, we go through phases of what kind of cuisine we like. And that's, I think, something that you see this going, excuse the pun, cycling through the fitness, that people are always looking for something new. You know, there are the boxers that will stick with it, but there are a lot of people who will embrace whatever is new.
Greg, what do you think lasts in this? Is everybody going to be looking for a club beyond just the old gym or a run through the park here?
You know, I think the days of the 20 and 30,000 square foot gym full of selectorized equipment are over. I think that's what's happening. The world's been working out wrong for a long time, and I think word has gotten out is all. But if you look at a CrossFit gym, there's kind of someone referred to it once as a is an Army general friend of mine. And Brian, thank you for your service, the caller. You said it was a Back to the Future kind of movement. If you roll the clock back and look at gyms prior to the 1960s, you'd see a lot of the typical kind of CrossFit equipment. And so I think that what we're doing is we're leaving what was a particularly unproductive phase in terms of fitness and public health. Look, the machines, the isolation movement, the bodybuilding, the long-distance cardio, all coupled with a high-carb, low-fat diet has been a disaster.
So you're saying that if you hit the treadmill and then hit the weights, that's wrong.
I'm saying that if you bodybuild on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and get on the treadmill Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, and think you're developing fitness, what you're doing is considerably better than doing nothing, but it's far from optimal. That's what I'm saying.
Greg Glassman, a lot of people responding to that message, crowding into those CrossFit gyms, a lot of them now across the country. Congratulations on getting that going, and thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom. And it's a global phenomenon. Half the gyms that come on every day are coming on outside of the U.S. So this is something that is transcending culture and normal national boundaries.
People looking for something new, and they're finding it. Greg Glassman with CrossFit, co-founder there. Thank you very much. Another call here. George in New Orleans, Louisiana. George, you're on.
Thanks for having me. I have a gym membership, and I also just joined something known as Krav Maga, which most people scratch their heads at because they don't know about it. But I think within the coming years, more people will know about it, kind of like they do CrossFit.
I'm scratching my head. What is it? Krav Maga. What is that?
Krav Maga. It originated in the Israeli army as a form of a way to do self-defense, including taking weapons from your perpetrator.
Okay.
But it involves a lot of high-intensity training, and I have the zeal of what I call a CrossFit vegan. You don't know if I'm going to talk about my diet or my exercise first, because it's really kind of changed my outlook on
a CrossFit vegan. You're blowing me away, George. So what do you get from Krav Maga?
You know what I'm saying, though? It's like the zeal that you would hear from somebody like that. Just the fact that you talk a lot about it when you do it.
Yep.
I'm doing that with Krav Maga now because I'm noticing results within 6 weeks, whereas the gym I belong to, which has a bar, I'm in New Orleans, that makes sense. So you don't get as much done unless you're a self-motivator. Whereas when I go to Krav Maga, I'm either in a cardio class or a self-defense class or another class where you're working with kettlebells and whatnot. And I am motivated by the fact that I can't slack off. There are people that I'm sparring with. I have a trainer essentially every time I show up. And I think that most people need something like that. It's really hard to push yourself, and I think that Krav Maga will probably start picking up more as people learn about it, and our sense of safety in today's world is also becoming more and more questionable. Unfortunately, it's just perception, perhaps, but I feel safer now walking down the streets of New Orleans knowing how to deal with a perpetrator, and a year from now I'll have even a better knowledge. So I'm wondering if anybody on your panel even has any kind of insight into the Krav Maga.
Sounds like Superman on the way. George, we hear the zeal, and we wish you good luck with it. I'll turn and look at that, but I want to get one more call, if I may, here first from Nashville. Renee. Renee, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I feel very lucky in Nashville because we're able to get these boutique experiences in our local community centers, which are run by the Metro Nashville government, and they're really affordable. And it sounds very much like what you're describing for Top Dollar. We have a program here called Pound, which is out of L.A., and we work out with weighted drumsticks to great music. And we have a community across the country because we actually can go online and take classes from the instructors out in L.A., and we have great classes here in Nashville.
And what's the cost, Renee?
The cost, you can drop in and take a class for $3. From $3 to $7, depending on a gym. An annual membership. I just signed up for a full year's membership, $325 for the entire year. And we very much have this community experience to the point where we get together at the instructor's house and take classes on our time off. See, that's the kind of community we have built here.
Yeah.
And the age range is from 20 to 75 years old in our class. And I would say we really are a tight-knit group, and we motivate each other, and we just have a blast. And it's out of L.A. These two women in L.A. Found it, but they have instructors around the world now. And it really feels like a community because we communicate online outside the classroom.
Renee, I love it. I love it. $3 a class, that's a whole different level here. I mean, Karen, why is it that it's become such a big money thing? It doesn't absolutely require that you have...
No, I think we should all move to Nashville, yeah. First of all. But one of the motivators for doing this story was that the Venerable Y in downtown Washington is closing. And it's closing because its membership dropped from 11,000 in the late 1990s to 3,400 last fall.
Wow.
And they said the rise in these boutique fitness classes was part of the problem. So, you know, just we're going to keep hearing about more and more programs. And I think the strong will survive, or we're going to, you know, just have more. It's going to change constantly.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the big rage for boutique fitness these days. The money, the mantras, the mojo. You've got SoulCycle and CrossFit, Solid Core, Flywheel, Core Power, Yoga, Pure Bar. Lots of these out there. They can cost a bundle every month. My guest Karen Heller says some people paying $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 a year to do these. But they are very popular right now, been spreading like crazy. Karen's been writing it up for The Washington Post. She's a national features reporter there. Jacqueline Emmerich is with us as well, fitness director at Shape Magazine. And, of course, they watch what's going on in this realm. You may as well. What do you think? Is this a new kind of religion, a shared search for meaning, for your best self on the bike somehow? Is it narcissism, collective narcissism, an obsession with body image? Is it just too much money to burn, or are people just trying to live healthier, live better, have some community? Is that so wrong? A lot of callers waiting to come here. Many people commenting online. Nick says these people have too much money. Rachel says, oh, you know, I love this. It's fun, challenging workout, excellent teachers, studios, clean and inviting. She does Physique 57. There's a new brand here every time you turn around. Viaka says just the branding concept of soul cycling. Consumers unconsciously believe they're cycling their way to immortality. Well, humans have tried that for a long time. Ian, a little skeptical, says, I sat in on a spinning class. I had to leave because I was laughing so hard on how motivating the class leaders were bouncing on their stationary bikes, punching the air, shouting, yaying, and hawing. I guess different strokes for different folks, but oh my goodness, you've not seen silliness like this. Well, it all depends what you're into, I guess. Juan in Miami, thank you for calling. Juan, you're on the air.
Tom, hi. It's a pleasure speaking with you today.
Me too. You too. What's your experience?
Yes, I actually, you know, my situation is a little particular. I had just gone through a very hard divorce, and I was kind of like your last caller. I think he was a veteran. You know, I was trying to get out there. And I was actually invited by a friend of mine to a spinning class. Mm-hmm. You could only be in this class if you're invited by one of the members.
Oh, boy.
That's already in the class.
Okay.
Right. So you can't just sign up. You can't just go there and sign
up. Very exclusive one.
Right, right. So he invited me to this. I thoroughly enjoyed it, you know. It was nice. Everybody there, like they say, like most of your callers have explained and the experts, you know. It's about community, you know. And it's nice, but I think some people take it to another level where, like you said, it almost comes like religiously and they have to do this. It's almost like a drug, right? And I think part of this is, you know, kind of like going back to what the caller said when he said, oh, it's about millenniums. And, you know, the point that he made, I think it's about what society is going through right now. I mean, maybe I'm getting too deep into this, but I think it's that everybody's looking for something to believe in. Everybody's mm-hmm. trying to be part of something special mm-hmm. because so many institutions in our society have, you know, left us, you know, they just haven't fulfilled that, like the church, all these things, you know. So everybody's looking for something special to do. And when they join these clubs, they find that. I just want to, one more thing before yes. before I go is a word of caution. I mean, there's a lot of these places out there that say that they could guarantee results and they could do all these things for you. But there's a lot of people getting hurt out there because some people don't know what they're doing. So people should do their research before joining these clubs. And if it seems wrong, then maybe you shouldn't do it.
When they say high intensity, they're not kidding, so be careful there. Juan, you're terrific. I hope we hear from you again. Please call again, and I'm glad you found a place that works for you. You're talking about people looking for something to believe in. I want to turn, if I may, and Jacqueline, Karen, stand by. Angie Thurston joins us right now from Cambridge, Massachusetts. She's working on her Master of Divinity at Harvard Divinity School and has co-authored a report called How We Gather that's paid attention to some of these the community found in fitness groups. Angie Thurston, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
What did you find?
Well, what we found with my colleague Casper Turkile and I, what we found was that there were communities across the United States and even the world that were giving people a meaningful experience of belonging outside the bounds of organized religion. And we were looking into that in the context of a changing religious landscape in which fully a third of millennials and a fifth of all Americans are now religiously unaffiliated, and those numbers are continuing to climb. So what we tracked in How We Gather were these places that in some way were counteracting the isolation that can come about by virtue of people losing one of these fundamental community infrastructures.
And does it work? Can I get that kind of community, that kind of spiritual fulfillment from a sweat and great abs?
Remarkably, we found that it does, and that people going in with a desire for increased physical fitness and health were getting, in some combination, community, personal transformation, accountability, and even creativity, purpose finding, and social transformation. And I think that has something to do with this shift. You know, there's a working definition of religion that's employed casually, where people will say, oh, CrossFit is my religion. But what does it mean when the line between that casual usage and the more sincere or serious usage begins to blur? And that's what we're seeing here, is that especially in terms of the intensity, the rigor, the discipline and accountability, that these communities are inviting people to become more than you are and to be part of something bigger than you.
Well, but we still associate religion and the ideal, you know, with philosophy, with a moral vision, with even some kind of transcendence. We associate, at least I do, fitness with endorphins. I mean, it really feels great, but... And I can see how you might find community there, but is it really tantamount?
Well, what we basically offer is an invitation to these communities to think about it in just the way you described, because something like CrossFit at the moment is focused on physical health, physical formation. And, you know, I'm in graduate school, so I recently wrote a paper comparing CrossFit to ancient Greek philosophic schools. And in that context, people were invited to a whole formative experience, and one in which they were becoming more ethical. So the question is, could a place like CrossFit think about what it means to be healthy, not just as a body, but as a person? And could a place like SoulCycle, where the tagline is "Find Your Soul," think about what it actually means to engage questions about the soul? And when we have these experiences we hear about where people are crying during the Hill Ballad toward the end of the workout,
yeah,
to ask what is the catharsis that's happening in that moment, and how might we understand what it is so that we can actually serve people better?
This is kind of amazing. Find your soul, not in a pew, but on a stationary bicycle. Mark in Washington, D.C., thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm calling because I wanted to speak about the ways that I've done CrossFit.
Yeah.
The ways that also create community, and in particular, what it does is create safe spaces for people.
Safe, right? Spaces. So safe in what? In what way? Nice equipment or something else?
Safe is in the sense that I can bring my whole self to the gym, right? So, as someone who's queer identified, I think it's really important to think about the ways that my queerness is something that I want to bring with me in all aspects. And CrossFit is really supportive of that.
Is it safer somehow than a traditional gym, Mark, to come in as queer and feel comfortable?
Right, because I think that gyms, as we typically think about them, have been very alpha male, heterosexual, very white, very male, very big muscle-based.
Yeah.
And if you don't identify with all those identities, it can seem really harsh, right? You don't want to be the sort of, quote, weak guy at the gym or the, quote, sissy guy at the gym in the ways that people stare at you. It could sometimes belittle you. But when you go to places like CrossFit, and what I found is that when you build that community, I can be openly queer and lift weights, right? Or you start to see the ways that CrossFit athletes who are women, the ways that their bodies aren't the traditional ideas of what we think about feminine weak bodies. These are strong women lifting heavy weights, doing amazing things. And I've seen how CrossFit can allow queer people and women to accept their bodies and see that their bodies can be really powerful, and that they don't have to feel less than, or that fitness is something that's only for men with big muscles, who we've typically seen as like gym rats.
Yeah, we've got it, Mark. And it's really interesting, and I'm glad you called. Thank you very much. Jacqueline, I mean, do you see this? These new boutique fitness outfits sort of breaking down the stereotypes around what fitness is, who's strong, what strength means, all the rest.
Absolutely. And I think that what Mark said is really awesome. I'm a regular CrossFitter too. And what I love about being in a CrossFit class is that you learn so much about yourself and what you're able to do, and you break boundaries every day. And that can happen in a number of other boutique fitness classes. But it really does give you this level of confidence, and it lets you connect with the people that are doing the same exact thing as you. And you feel this support for one another, and you feel proud of one another. And all of that superficial stuff just doesn't matter in that moment. And it is a really safe place.
It's pretty cool. Jeff in Charlotte, North Carolina. Jeff, thanks for calling. What do you think?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. But I'm 85 years old, and I guess I'd be called a hardcore cyclist, although I really don't think of myself as one. But
all right.
I have been cycled all my life, raced and everything. And I cannot believe what I'm hearing about these people spending all this money on what they call soul cycling. It's just blows my mind. It just seems insane, ridiculous. You don't even need all the lycra outfits that regular bicycle riders use. You know, a pair of shorts and a t-shirt is fine, and you know, just get out on a bicycle and ride. And why do you need to spend all this money?
What do you think is driving it then, Jeff? You can hear people's enthusiasm for it. What do you think is driving it?
Well, I've done it all my life. I used to ride 15 miles each way to work in Detroit. I think it's narcissism. You know, I just can't believe that people will spend all this money to do something that's so simple and relatively easy to do. And you know, if you really, you know, I've known dozens of people have taken up cycling and they've lost tremendous amounts of weight, 50, 75 pounds.
Yeah. Don't necessarily need the Lycra and the special program. Jeff, our time is short, but I appreciate that call. Karen Heller, what do you make of that? You know, 85 years old, a big cyclist, and you said, this is narcissism. This is unnecessary.
I think there is much in what he says, and I've raised this point at the end of my story, is that it is a lot about motivation, because I am a hiker, and that costs almost nothing. There are people who run barefoot in parts of the world. We don't need all of this. And I think you go looking, this goes back to that terrific paper, how we gather, of what we go seeking what we need. And if you have the money, I suppose that's what you do. And there are other people who do bike in Detroit in the winter. They don't have to go inside to a spinning class. They'll keep going. You know, in Portland and Seattle, some of the wettest cities in America, people bike constantly. The rain will not stop them. But a lot of people, and I put this in my story, for them, working out is boring. It's a challenge. We know many Americans are overweight and are not doing it. So I feel like what gets you there and makes you feel good is what works. And everyone is different. And there are people who go into these classes, I won't name which ones, and they go, I cannot believe what is going on. But the people who are there, you know, week in, day out, it's because they love it. And that's why we looked into it. We knew something was happening when there is a class in Washington at 6:30 on Friday night that is full.
That should be cocktail hour in Washington.
That's right. This is Washington. And I said, instead of John Boehner, now we have Paul Ryan and we have Michelle Obama, who, you know, she goes to one of the classes that I go to. So everyone there wants to have her arms. So they're there.
Instead of John Boehner's Dean Martin lifestyle, you're right. You've got Paul Ryan with a P.
Right. P90X. And it's a lot like faith. You go, we all know there are people who find faith wherever. There are people who found it through yoga. There are people who find it through therapy. There are people who find it through, the community of, you know, fantasy football. So I think this is part of it. It's about building community and finding like-minded people and feeling better about what you're doing.
Angie Thurston, we can argue about the spiritual aspect of this. I guess it's hard to argue about the physical benefits if you do it with commitment. It works on that front. But I do wonder about what's being striven for here. I mean, when Karen writes about this in Washington, she says Washington's becoming an Uber Washington. thinking about this in your terms, just, this is an endorphin-enhanced city of exertion, competition, constant self-improvement, winding up instead of down. Is that the path to real enlightenment, Angie? Maybe it is.
Well, I think it goes back to the hunger that people have for meaningful community and for the experience of actually growing and actually becoming more in some way that you can experience personally, and that needs to be incorporated into the intentions that these organizations have as they think about their work moving forward. That when an instructor at SoulCycle says, inhale intention, exhale expectation, that that may be the only authoritative word of wisdom a person hears in their week. Or when people start bringing their whole lives to a CrossFit box, as we just heard, and creating meal plans when someone's partner or parent gets sick, that this may be the only church-like structure in place for them. And so while it does certainly have to do with the personal formation and even rigorous personal formation, which has been part of religious practice for centuries, it also has to do with doing that in community.
Does it look durable to you, or maybe it doesn't matter, Angie? Maybe we reconfigure around whatever's happening at the moment. Churches less full, boutique fitness studios more full.
Well, it comes down to the relationships, both the relationships among the participants and then the relationship that they each and collectively have to whatever they might use to describe that something more, whether that's the transcendent, the divine, or God. And that as it stands, even if something like CrossFit were to no longer exist, the relationships that have been forged in CrossFit are deep and in some cases lifelong. People are meeting their partners and bringing their kids there. So there's something about this phenomenon, even if the particular boutiques themselves end up changing hands or moving to something new, that I think is representative of a particular moment in our culture where people are more digitally connected but more locally isolated than they've ever been.
We are seekers as a species, and right now in these boutique fitness programs, some very ripped, physically fit seekers, it sounds like. And if the money's there, people will pay it. Not everybody's got it. Not everyone needs it. But boy, a lot of people are crowding in there. Angie Thurston is co-author of How We Gather at the Harvard Divinity School. Angie, thanks so much for spending a minute with us today.
Thank you.
Jacqueline Emmerich, fitness director at Shape Magazine. You're terrific. Thanks for joining us from New York today.
Thank you.
And Karen Heller, national features reporter for The Washington Post, who got us onto this in the first place. Karen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, at our website, onpointradio.org, you can read a post from one of our producers here, Nick Anderson, Why I Sold My Soul to SoulCycle. It's all right there. Check it out. Good luck staying fit and in community, however you do it. Thanks for joining us today right here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.